League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
It's the Famous Monsters Podcast, the official podcast of Famous Monsters of Filmland Magazine.
Welcome to the Famous Monsters Podcast, the official podcast of Horace J. Ackerman's classic magazine that started it all back in 1958. Often imitated, never duplicated, we're more than just monsters. We cover sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and all kinds of genre pop culture, living up to Forey's classic roots while staying current and ahead of the curve. I'm David Weiner, editor of Famous Monsters, and with me today is Holly Interlandi, editor-in-chief of American Gothic Press.
Hello.
George Marrero, our all-around jack-of-all-trades and resident artist here.
Good morning.
I didn't know where I was going with that. And then we got Cameron. Are you our producer today?
Yeah, but where are the spiders? That's what I want to know.
Cameron Hathaway, thank you very much. The spiders.
You mean the spiders from Mars?
Yes.
Yeah, that's why we're here today. We're doing a special podcast where we're going to talk about our loss today of an icon, loss today of an amazing artist who has a lot to do with Famous Monsters, has a lot to do with pop culture, and was a tremendous, tremendous influence. We lost David Bowie this weekend. We're also going to be talking about Angus Scrimm, who we lost as well, the tall man from Phantasm and other things as well. So it's a bit somber, but today is also a celebration because it's very, very, very important to draw attention to these wonderful artists and their influence and what they did for us and how they integrated their work with our lives every step of the way. Holly, what was your thought when you heard the news that David Bowie passed away of cancer at the age of 69?
I don't know how to put it other than to say I was devastated. I cried. I don't usually cry over stuff like that, or at all, really. But David Bowie's very existence, like just the fact that you knew he was around, was something that people like me and sort of quirky weirdos artists, all of us, it was just a comforting thing to have him there, like sort of just making it all okay, like just not even just his music, but his expressions of gender identity, his weird offbeat movie roles, his ability to reinvent himself, just all of these things were just so important to not just me, but a whole bunch of people like me.
And he was offbeat from the get-go, and I think he capitalized that, and it turned his career into an opportunity to address the people who worked on the fringes and lived on the fringes and emotionally were looking to fit in or stay out from fitting in. And he addressed that directly. George, what was your thought when you first heard this news?
I found out like at midnight, and I was just, I was already actually reading about Angus, and I was like, oh wow, that is horrible. I'm processing that, and then I see this, and I was like, why is everyone leaving?
It's losing like
I'm losing my childhood, yeah. You know? Especially, I remember vividly being like, it was like 1988, 89, and my mom and dad coming home with the VHS of like Labyrinth. Mm-hmm. And granted, he had been in my life already with music, so my mom had him while I was in the womb. You know, but I remember seeing Labyrinth, seeing him as the Goblin King, and for me, it was like, it was a visual presentation of like, I can be this badass mofo rocking some tights and singing songs, you know, taking names, and it's like, and granted, in a child movie, but as a child, I was like, all right, this guy's so cool. I wanted to be him.
I was so bad.
I was mesmerized by his prestidigitation, the fact that he could take these orbs. And I mean, back in those days, he didn't have any CGI.
Yeah,
and I was just
that's
like,
him.
He's doing this. Yeah. He's doing this.
And he was a very mesmerizing presence everywhere. And it's like how you were saying, like he made it okay to be you. And he did it in a way where it wasn't like he was trying to stick out from everyone else. I feel like nowadays artists, whether actors, musicians, they're trying to be a gimmick.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
With him, that's just who he was.
Well, he was the template. He established the template, yeah. And every artist from Madonna on, you could just, a laundry list, Lady Gaga,
yeah.
They all owe everything to Bowie and the way he reinvented himself every new album. And it was always tremendously imaginative, tremendously important every time he had a new album that it was going to become an entirely new persona. You couldn't wait when a new album was going to come out after he was going to be, you know, he's Ziggy Stardust, Aladdin, Sane. I mean, let's name, we could just name.
Hunky Dory.
Yeah. The man who sold the world.
Yeah, you know, it's just amazing where every single time he would come up with a new persona, it was almost shocking when Let's Dance came out. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm just actually just kind of a blonde David Bowie. And you're like, oh my God, it's a whole new personality. this is a revelation because he doesn't have to be weird. He can just be what he wants to be. And ironically, that was his most successful album in terms of like hitting the pop charts.
And even just last week, Black Star, his latest album, at 69, this guy still is making music. And just, I don't know if you've heard any of the music or seen the music video that goes along with Black Star.
Lazarus is insane.
It's still just amazing.
It's incredible. Yeah. I mean, he has kept with it as far as like musically and culturally more than just about any other artist.
Absolutely.
At all. Like, and you know, what I find interesting about our Cameron or our particular generation is that obviously Labyrinth was part of our childhood, and that's how most of us were introduced to David Bowie. But then also, at least I remember being around in the 90s a bunch of David Bowie's very underappreciated albums and how. You know, everybody was always talking about his greatness in the 70s and 80s. But when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, I was listening to Bowie's like Earthling. I think that's a great album. And yet nobody mentions it when they're talking about Bowie. So it's just I think we have a very unique perspective as far as our age goes.
Absolutely.
Sure, yeah. He's definitely one of those people who it's kind of like our Star Wars conversations. Like he goes with the eras, of our lives. Every lifetime gets a piece of Bowie, a different shape or form of him.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, which is nice.
What was your first experience with Bowie? Anybody?
I know that, like, while my dad had a huge vinyl collection, Bowie was never in it because that just wasn't what my dad was, like, listening to at the time. But, like, I would always listen to old classic rock radio stations and stuff like that. And eventually you hear a couple of songs and you start at a young age, like, you start putting that together. Like, oh, okay, like, that guy sounds cool. Oh, I think I heard something else by him. And honestly, I think it was the radio that really got me involved in his music and introduced in his music. Like George says, Labyrinth was the one that made it like, oh, who is that majestical man? Like, I must know more. But like, I think also when The Life Aquatic came out, like I remember that had a huge impact on me because I kind of fell out of Bowie at one point or just like wasn't on my radar as much because I was doing different things. But then all of a sudden, like Seo George is doing Portuguese cover songs.
Acoustic covers.
Exactly. Yeah, Bowie mixed with actual Bowie, some of his best stuff. And then that really got me reinvigorated in a sense. I'm just like, yes, that's right. He is an awesome guy. And though I would go back like after school and rewatch over and over again Ziggy Stardust and Spiders from Mars, the theatrical film. The behind the scenes and the concert. Yeah, it was fantastic. So that was me growing up. That was like really my first exposure to him.
Holly?
Yeah.
Well, I think I already mentioned my first exposure was Labyrinth, but I think David Bowie became more important to me later on in my teenage years. Actually, my favorite film of all time is Todd Haynes' Velvet Goldmine. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if any of you have seen it, but it's essentially a fictionalized version of David Bowie's early career.
Right,
and
the glam rock movement.
However you feel about where David Bowie took his career or whatever, that movie really captures the essence of just rock and roll and the spirit of him so much. And so, you know.
Musically, what was the first Bowie song that you had to have?
Musically, the first Bowie song I had to have
again and again.
That's really hard.
Well, you think about that. For me, it was my sister's 3 years older than me, and she was very, very, very into music, and she had an amazing record collection that I, of course, would plunder when she wasn't around, and I put them back exactly how I found them. So if she's listening now, I always kept them in pristine condition, but she had the best collection, so I had to go to them. But she had Bowie, and I listened to that, and I remember my first experience. She would be playing Changes. And Changes One, and I'm listening to Major Tom, that immediately struck me, and I had to hear that over and over and over. And this, of course, is in a world before Star Wars comes along. So 2001: Space Odyssey, Star Trek, and perhaps Space 1999 at the time were pretty much my exposure to outer space. And here, acoustically, in one song, he captures taking off, mm-hmm. going into space. And feeling helpless and alone. And it was the first time in my whole brain ever thought that, wait, this might be an analogy for something. And I couldn't quite grasp the literal nature of that, but I started feeling it. And it's funny to me because also listening to his music, I loved Bowie when I first heard him, and I hated him when I first heard him because on the radio, Fame was playing
constantly.
and I remember Fame, which is a song that now I love. Let me just get that straight. He co-wrote that with John Lennon as a lark. And the thing is, I remember when I first heard that music, I was like, how did this guy get on the radio? I thought you had to be good to get on the radio. This is out of tune. Is the record warped? I really thought something was off, and it wasn't until much later, A, that I learned that it was Bowie, and B, that I learned how radical that was and how impressive it was that people embraced that. Because I think, if anything, David Bowie's music was both accessible and inaccessible and complicated and challenging every step of the way. For every most amazing definitely. Hit, you know, changes. Every time you've got one of those, you've got some really complicated things and albums that even didn't do well, you know. But he was always growing and stretching.
It was always different. Yeah. He was never a one-trick pony whatsoever. He never stood still enough to let moss collect on him. He was just like – he was almost like the Doctor in a sense. Like he'd always have – he'd be just
– I always thought he was a Time Lord.
Exactly. And like, one of the nicest things I saw, because like I'm sure everyone's social media today has just been blowing up with just nothing but David Bowie, which is also really cool because it wasn't just one set of people who were mourning. Like the whole world is pretty much mourning because he either in films or music has touched everyone in some way. Might not be a major way, might be just a small way, but still they know the name. They know what comes with that name. And what was I going to say? I was on a roll there for a second, but I was going to say one of the nicest things I saw about Bowie's departure from this world was, well, listen, we knew he was only here for a short time. Now he's gone back up to space. And I was just like, that's great.
He's nice. Back where he belongs as far as I think everyone is concerned.
Oh, absolutely. People, I mean, everyone calls him a space alien as a, like, a compliment, like for a reason.
I also think the great irony is that, you know, with Black Star, with this last album, the single that he released first and the video, if you watch it, it's mm-hmm. very haunting. It's called Lazarus.
Yeah.
And he's talking about being up in heaven and wondering what's going on. And it's haunting and elegiac. Say the word with me. Elegiac.
It's not the elegiac. I thought you were having a stroke. I don't know what you're trying to say.
No, I edited a magazine.
We've lost too many. Not you, David.
No!
Oh, damn it. But it's a tremendous song. And I think while we sort of bounce around all over the place, I think it's very crucial to talk about, obviously, his acting career and the choices he made. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we've been talking about Labyrinth a lot, but, of course, The Hunger. That film alone was a tremendous influence on my appreciation of cinematography and storytelling from a very emotional point of view. I mean, he plays a timeless vampire mm-hmm. who runs out of time, and all of a sudden his clock is gone. And I remember the makeup was spectacular. This is, of course, on the heels of other roles where, say, The Man Who Fell to Earth. Mm-hmm. I'm bouncing around here, but I also want to make sure that
he was always playing something not unhuman. Never played a human.
He played. He was in The Elephant Man on Broadway, and a lot of people don't either know that or remember that. But that was a role where, when the film came out, You know, it was very realistic makeup. But when you're on stage and you're the Elephant Man, John playing John Merrick, it's all body. It's all movement. It's all imagination. Yeah. And Bowie was the perfect embodiment. It was a spectacular performance.
Absolutely. And even in like later in his acting career, too, like being playing Nikola Tesla mm-hmm. in The Prestige, yes. which yeah. is an awesome sci-fi movie as well. So just to see his range. And he wasn't one of those like musicians who are just like, oh, I'll have a cameo and that'll be that. Because some musicians love that. They'll be like, OK, I'm a musician. And then I'll go and do like some big like movie as either a cameo of myself or like some weird far out role. David Bowie, like, you could tell
he was
very
a real
careful.
Actor.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He was very careful what he signed on to. And I appreciate that because it just kind of added to him, like, of that person.
Well, yeah. I mean, now that I think about it, my first necessity as far as David Bowie goes was just the entire album, Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. Mm-hmm. And just, and that, that, and just the, that as a concept album, I mean, that was one of the very first concept albums, yeah. and this is him playing a role of you know, an alien who falls to Earth, becomes this incredibly successful musician, and then crashes and burns, mm-hmm. and that is a story in an album, and so he was playing a role already with his music, movies were just a natural transition.
His connection with sci-fi has always been extremely powerful. I mean, yes. It's almost like The Man Who Sold the World, which was later covered by Nirvana. That alone is almost like a Twilight Zone episode. You know, can imagine the character just from the title of that song alone. His influence goes beyond measure, and I think a lot of people, because he hasn't been so prevalent in, let's say, the last decade in terms of chart rankings and relevance, it's very, very important for a younger generation to understand how important he was.
If he wasn't here, a lot of your favorite artists would not exist. Yeah.
It's very, very, very true. He printed the template. He created the mold, and then he broke it over and over and over again.
Well, and even, you know, even it's funny because you say that. It's like, it's true that, you know, he as far as chart relevance, it wasn't maybe so up there in the past decade. But then he would put out a new album or a new song, and all of a sudden everyone was like, oh, yeah, David Bowie is still with it. Like,
and he has it still.
I remember when the next day, the first single from that Where Are We Now first came out, mm-hmm. and everyone was like, whoa! Oh yeah, David Bowie, man! Like that's how it was. That's how it felt every time he put out something new.
I also thought, I wanted to add real quick that there are a couple. You know, he made a lot of cameos in a lot of films as well.
Oh, Zoolander, and, yeah.
I have to say, there's one film that a lot of people just didn't quite see that they should seek out, and that's called Absolute Beginners. And it's a musical, and it's wonderful. And he contributes some music to that. We also have to mention Cat People, Putting Out Fire, which Quentin Tarantino also appropriated to put in Inglourious Basterds. His influence too. I mean, there's a great song that's not even his song, but it's inspired by his song, which is Peter Schilling's Major Tom. You know. Yeah.
Like he's been featured on in pop culture as well, like Venture Brothers cartoon. They had him as the head of the Guild of Calamitous Intent, and he was such a badass in that as well. And it just shows you like so many people were influenced by him. Like we keep going back and going
comics
back
too,
to that.
Yeah. Comics too. I mean, I was just going back and like all like some of the most popular comics are like Kieran Gillen and
Jamie
McKelvey's Wicked and Divine right now mm-hmm. is a love letter to David Bowie.
That's so true.
That entire series is just like the character of Lucifer mm-hmm. from the first arc is just Bowie.
And by all accounts, he was also a wonderful human being, and he was a good guy, and
kept himself too. Which, you don't hear that anymore about celebrities. They're all always about like, oh, where's TMZ? Look, my panties, and then voila. Yeah.
You know, for as giant as he was, I thought it was like very impressive. You know, when he would put himself in a band, Tin Machine, or something like that, or he would back someone, or he would play. I mean, he played. He played saxophone on "Walk on the Wild Side" by Lou Reed. You know, he was a creative powerhouse that didn't have to be the center of the limelight every single time. He just wanted to collaborate. One of his great collaborates, "Under Pressure."
Yeah,
oh
know.
God,
that was my I think musical introduction to Bowie was that because I grew up listening to Queen. You know, which we've all established.
Yeah.
But like my mom would put that album on, and I just remember like totally putting on repeat over and over and over again.
Vanilla Ice owes
his entire
career to
Under Pressure.
Yes.
Yeah,
true.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Whenever I'm listening to the radio and then that opening riff comes on, I'm like, all right, is this Vanilla Ice or is this the real thing?
Yeah. So we launched careers.
Yeah.
Yeah. That right there, it was that wraps up like my childhood, I think, even to my teenage years. Always having that song. That was like a must have in every playlist at certain points. Just like for the both of them.
So going around it.
No, I was going to say, did you feel like you were under pressure to put that on every playlist?
Very much so.
Thank you, Cameron.
Yeah.
Going around the room real quick. I know this is hard. Favorite, you have to pick one. Favorite Bowie film and favorite Bowie song.
Okay.
Am I allowed to pick Velvet Goldmine as a Bowie film?
You may. You may as the inspiration.
Because it is my favorite movie of all time, and it is entirely due to Bowie. So that's my film. And my favorite Bowie song is going to be an unusual one that actually helped me in my creativity to write a book, Rock and Roll Suicide.
There we go.
I'm going to volunteer that my favorite film is The Hunger, flat out. It's such a great film. And Ashes to Ashes, among all his other songs, I can listen to that on eternal repeat.
I would have to say for film, Ziggy Stardust, because I would watch it so many times. And then for song, it's a little bit, might not be everyone's cup of tea, but Oh, You Pretty Things from Hunky Dory. I can listen to that for the rest of my life. Yeah. I love it so much. And I'll always, always belt out the chorus with
them. You got a little teary-eyed there, my friend?
A little bit. Yeah, I am, too.
Absolutely. Oh, I cried really hard.
Oh, not to cut off George for real quick, but like the last time, like Colly was saying at the beginning, like you just not so often does a celebrity come along that you actually like feel sad about losing. Like when Robin Williams passed, I was on the verge of tears. I think I did cry because that was a huge impact. When I heard David Bowie died last night, I was very upset, very distraught, and like that's the only other time I can think of a celebrity's invoked that much emotion from me.
Yeah,
so, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Let's touch upon like what you're saying right now. Like, it's not like I haven't had the emotional breakdown yet, but the only other time I feel like this happened, like, Michael Jackson died for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was like in shock, and then when I saw the funeral,
yeah,
that was the day because now I'm seeing it, and it's like
it's no longer alive.
I was on my couch. Jen was my wife was somewhere else on the computer, and I just started like bawling. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and I'm a grown man, like, crying to someone I've never met.
No.
And like I have a feeling like if they have a televised thing of this, like I know that's when it's gonna settle. And it's like, no, it's real.
I have to add, before you even give you Leonard Nimoy for me was sort of the last celebrity I cried about because he touched my life so much.
Yeah.
You don't think about it. You don't realize it. You know, at first, until like when they go, and it's like, oh wow, like they were in every part of my world. Yeah. Like,
I just assumed they would live forever.
Everyone assumed he would live forever.
Exactly. He's immortal,
and in theory, he is.
Yeah,
like, right now, he is living forever. Mm-hmm. You know, through all of our life experiences. And to answer the question,
we get to keep his legacy and play it and watch it.
Exactly. Like when I go home, like last night it was too late, but when I go home, I'm gonna pop in my favorite movie, which we said before, it is Labyrinth.
And I'd say your favorite Bowie song, would that be Under Pressure probably? Or?
It's probably Under Pressure, but the beauty of Labyrinth is that he sings songs in it.
Yes, that's true.
And you know what? Like I took those songs and I put them like in my iPod a while back. And I listened to them and people were like, what are you listening to? What is that? I was like, this is David Bowie from The Labyrinth.
This is the Goblin right, this King. Is, this
and
is,
he was interacting with a bunch of Jim Henson puppets dance. And exactly making it believable.
Yeah. It was a big music video for David Bowie.
Pretty much. That's how it felt. If like you know, like Michael Jackson, this felt like I was watching a movie music video.
Yeah,
you know, and it was the best thing ever, and it still is. Like, no matter how old I get, that is going to be the most amazing thing for me to see. I'm going to share it with my children someday.
Yeah.
And I love it so much. Like, I love that my parents brought that into my life.
And his wig in that has tremendous.
Oh, I love it.
For me, that was it's not even a wig. That is real.
That is his.
That is he made that happen. I remember.
He could have done that to his hair at some point.
Yeah, because I had long hair as a kid. I had super long hair down to my butt. It's like I would try to like puff it out, hairspray, mousse, and everything, and get it out to that look so I can be him. I put on like my underoos and stuff, you know, and I'd become the Goblin.
I'm the Goblin King. Yeah. That's nice, honey. Yeah.
Well, this past weekend, we lost another horror great as well. Angus Grimm, who played the tall man in the Phantasm movies, he passed away at the age of 89. He also like Bowie, by all accounts, was just an absolute sweetheart of a man, a wonderful, wonderful person.
Quite the opposite of the character he played in the
exactly.
movie.
Exactly. And some of the greats, it's funny, you know, when they're so terrifying on screen, they're even that much more pleasant in personal life. And he was a favorite of everybody's off screen. But, of course, on screen, he scared the crap out of all of us.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people in Phantasm, people used to mention the silver... The balls.
The silver spheres.
Yeah, the spheres. Yeah. As like, you know, I mean, then they may have been the iconic, like, you know, the device in those movies. But for me, the Phantasm, I mean, the terror came from the tall man. I mean, he was what was so scary.
Oh, it's a tremendously intimidating character who, all, you know, he only says only a handful of
he didn't
utterances.
Have to say anything.
All he has to do is just go, boy.
He's one of the few, like, evil figures in horror or any kind of genre that just seeing him, just a glimpse of him, gave you the terror that you needed for the rest of that film. Nothing was needed, just like a little twitch of the eyebrow, and that's it. It's like, I don't want to be in the room with that guy.
I saw that movie such a long time ago, and like, I don't remember much of it, but the one thing I will always remember is the tall man.
Yes.
Yes.
It's funny because he... that was in 1979. It's one of J.J. Abrams' favorite films, and Captain Phasma is literally named after the ball.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Phantasm.
Oh, that's fantastic.
He's like, oh, look at that shiny armor. It's like straight out of the sphere in Phantasm. Wait a minute. Oh, Captain Phasma.
That's really cool. I didn't know that.
But Angus Grimm did, ultimately, he did five movies. He did more than five movies. He did five Phantasm movies. The fifth Phantasm movie is still yet to come out. The other ones were all, let's see, Phantasm 1 and 2 were in the theaters, and the rest were sort of straight-to-video ones. Phantasm 5, Ravager, is
it's
coming.
It's been teased a lot, yeah, especially last year.
But that is going to be coming out soon. He did other things. I mean, he's been on television. He's been in movies. But Phantasm, he only did a handful of things as an actor before Phantasm came around. But he was even a journalist, and he wrote liner notes for albums. He actually won a Grammy at one point, and he did liner notes for, let's see, Frank Sinatra, The Beatles, Arthur Rubinstein, and Itzhak Perlman. So it's pretty shocking that you can sort of have a career as a six foot five person having nothing to do with film. Someone sees you, they say, you're an intimidating presence, even though you're a nice guy. Let's make you the bad guy. And that altered his career path completely.
Yeah. Changed his name for that role.
And he was in a lot of other Don Coscarelli movies as well. And it's one of those iconic characters that it's limited to one film franchise, but it's enough. I mean, he's kind of like the Darth Vader of horror to a certain degree, simply just because of his intimidating presence.
Yeah, very ominous presence.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So we're gonna miss Angus, and at least we have one movie coming out that we get to see his greatness as a tall man one more time, which is nice. And it's kind of ironic that, or it's a testament to these people that they knew what their fans wanted. Mm-hmm. So between Bowie and Angus, we still have work to appreciate what they did for us and how they made us feel. And we're gonna miss them. We're gonna miss them
very much.
So thank you very much for listening. Yeah. It's the Famous Monsters podcast. You can go to famousmonsters.com for more content. You can go to captainco.com for subscriptions and merchandise. You can look for Famous Monsters. The current issue is on stands now, the December issue, Star Wars issue. And look for us on all the various social media locations, as well as American Gothic Press.
You can find Famous Monsters online at FMOF, and then on various social media, and then AGP as well, at AGP Monsters.
Yeah, you can find me. I'm just AGP editor as well. So
yeah.
Okay, and I'm at Tiki Ambassador. And for at FMOF, we want to say thank you very much. And I've been promising an X-Files episode, and we are going to do that next. But this is unfortunately something that we thought was very, very important.
We had to talk about it.
It's an emergency.
Yeah.
And we share your despondency over the loss of some real greats this year, including Han Solo. And so...
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Yes,
goodness. Hey, listen, it's made like $20 billion at this point. If you still have not seen it, you know, that's your own fault. Yeah.
That was a joke.
I know. I'm not talking to you. I'm just talking to people in general who are like, spoilers. Like, listen, if you haven't seen it by now, are you waiting for it for like DVD? Come on.
You know what? What we'll do this. Is we'll put in writing, beware at the very tail end of this podcast.
Is there a giant Star Wars
spoiler? But on that note, and until next time, this is all of us from Famous Monsters at the Famous Monsters Podcast saying rest in peace and thank you very much.
The Famous Monsters Podcast is copyright Famous Monsters and Movieland Classics, LLC. All rights reserved.
It's true. They got a message from the Action Man. I'm happy. Hope you're happy too.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.